how did the doomsday clock metaphor come about?
Well, it was started by the nuclear scientists who basically developed the atomic bombs that ended World War II to alert the community to the risk to civilization that nuclear weapons pose.
Mm.
Once, initially, only the USA had nuclear weapons, but then in the late 1940s, the Soviet Union developed them as well. And the possibility of nuclear war between nuclear-armed nations emerged.
Mm.
And the scientists decided they needed to warn humanity about this risk. And during the Cold War, the clock moved steadily closer to midnight. After the Soviet Union collapsed and there was optimism that nuclear weapons might no longer be deployed, it eased back. But in the last decade, it's moved steadily forward closer to midnight.
Mm.
Firstly, as there's increasing numbers of countries developing nuclear weapons or showing signs of wanting to develop them, like North Korea and Iran. And secondly, because of the additional risk of climate change that since 2007, the atomic scientists have said, is also a significant risk that could cause the end of civilization.
Mm. So we are currently 100 seconds away from midnight on this clock, the closest it's ever been. What are the sizable risks like climate change and, you know, nuclear blunder that will particularly sway those decisions? How does it actually get gauged on this scale of the atomic clock?
Well, it's basically a value judgment,
mm.
but the number of nuclear weapons in the world has declined in the last 30 years, but there's still 10,000, which is enough to wipe out all human life several times over.
Mm-hmm.
And what the report said this year was that while it appeared for some time that there'd been progress in the sense that there were no extra countries developing nuclear weapons, the talks between Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un don't seem to have done anything to slow development of nuclear weapons by North Korea. And the U.S. pulling out of the negotiated deal with Iran has removed the impediment to Iran developing nuclear weapons. And there's now a real risk of a nuclear arms race in the Middle East.
So given these tensions, it sounds almost like this is something of like a second Cold War. Would that be an exaggeration, or how accurate would that statement be?
Well, it's pretty accurate. I mean, the conflict between China and the U.S. has been conducted largely through trade,
mm.
but underlying that is basically an arm wrestle between the two most powerful nations in the world. But there are also now a range of little countries with nuclear weapons. And what the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists warned is that the lesson of Saddam Hussein, who was overthrown in a couple of weeks by the Allied forces, who alleged he had weapons of mass destruction, but was overthrown very quickly because he didn't.
Yeah.
The lesson of that to any tin pot dictator is that if you don't want to be pushed around by the big nations, you should develop nuclear weapons.
Mm.
And if you compare that with the very delicate way in which people are approaching North Korea, precisely because North Korea does have nuclear weapons and is developing missiles that would enable it to wreak havoc as far away as the USA.
Mm.
And on top of all of that, we're making very little progress in the area of climate change. The Australian Academy of Science said 6 years ago to have a 50-50 chance of keeping the increase in global temperature below 2 degrees, global emissions of greenhouse gases would need to peak by 2020 and then go steeply downwards.
Yeah.
Well, we're now at 2020, and there's no sign of them going down. In fact, our national government is talking about subsidising a new coal-fired power station.
Yeah.
And I saw today the Victorian government has removed the ban on drilling for onshore gas.
Mm.
So our state and federal governments, by and large, are still behaving as if climate change was an optional extra as long as it doesn't slow down the rate of economic growth.
Yeah, no, it's definitely concerning, and I'm sure our listeners here on 2SER are very familiar with it because we've done extensive coverage. But would disruptive technologies like, say, AI, cyber warfare, and, you know, the disinformation campaigns that some are pointing at for recent elections around the world contribute to future influences on the clock's position?
Yes, I mean, they were specifically mentioned because there's now a possibility that nuclear war could be started by the spread of misinformation or by interfering with the complex computer control systems that are used to manage our sophisticated weapons. So it's entirely possible that you get a nuclear war started not because a leader has a brain snap, but because of misinformation being spread through cyberspace or a malicious attack on computerized control systems.
Yeah. Now, finally, when we look at the doomsday clock, obviously it is a big doom and gloom thing, and a lot of the things we've spoken about in here are very heavy, but it's also had a big influence on the arts, particularly, as I mentioned in the introduction, with music, and it's also influenced some space artists and various other forms. Why should we be keeping track of the time of the doomsday clock, and why should we perhaps see it as a positive thing to look forward and say, like, hey, this is an indicator that we need to improve ourselves?
Well, I mean, we post warning signs on the road to warn drivers who aren't familiar with it that there's a dangerous curve coming up and that they need to slow down. And in a sense, what the doomsday clock is a warning. And the scientists who developed it were hoping that an awareness of the risk would alert people and make it less likely that catastrophic things would happen.
Yeah.
And I think that's still the role of the doomsday clock, you know, like the warning signs on the road. They're to alert us to the need to be more careful.
Yeah, no, I think that is a fantastic comparison. Thank you very much for joining us on the show, Ian. That's all the time we had today.
Okay, pleasure to talk to you.